Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, October 24th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page. Bailey family named crash victims. Son, grandkids of GOP governor candidate die in chopper crash. The son of Republican candidate for governor Darren Bailey, along with two of Bailey's grandchildren and daughter-in-law, were killed in a helicopter crash in Montana, the former state senator's campaign announced early Thursday. On Wednesday evening, Darren and his wife, Cindy, received the heartbreaking news no parent ever wants to hear. Their son, Zachary, his wife, Kelsey, and their two young children, Veda Rose, age 12, and Samuel, age 7, tragically lost their lives in a helicopter accident in Montana, the campaign said on Facebook. The couple's third child was not on the helicopter. The accident comes just weeks after Bailey of Xenia in southern Illinois announced his plans to run for the GOP nomination for governor for the second time. Bailey was the Republican nominee for the office in 2022 before losing by about 13 percentage points to Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker. Bailey's Lieutenant Governor running mate, Aaron Del Mar, said the family was in Montana on a business trip so that Zachary Bailey could expand their use of helicopters as part of the family's farm business in south-central Illinois. Zachary Bailey got his first helicopter license years ago, Del Mar said, so that he could deliver medical supplies and aid to people in third world countries. That was the driving force for him to get his license, he said. The cause of the crash was not known, Del Mar said. The National Transportation Safety Board said Thursday it was investigating the crash near the town of Eccalaca. The sheriff's office in Carter County said it responded to the site southwest of the town early Wednesday evening. Darren and Cindy are heartbroken by this unimaginable loss, the Bailey campaign said on Facebook. They are finding comfort in their faith, their family, and the prayers of so many who love and care for them. The Baileys deeply appreciate the kindness and support they have received and ask for privacy as they grieve and hold their loved ones close during this difficult time. In a statement on X, Pritzker and his wife, M.K., offered their condolences to the Bailey family. M.K. and I are devastated to learn of the tragic passing of Darren and Cindy Bailey's son, Zachary, daughter-in-law, Kelsey, and their two young children, Veda Rose and Samuel, the governor said. Our prayers and deep condolences are with the Baileys in this time of grief. May the memories of their loved ones be a blessing. This coming Monday marks the first day in Illinois of the week-long filing period for candidates running for governor and other offices to qualify for the top ballot position in the race. Del Mar said it's the campaign's intention to file its petitions, but he said he hasn't discussed those details with Bailey. We're concentrating on the family right now, Del Mar said. In a statement, the Illinois GOP said it's lifting up the Bailey family, their friends, and community in prayer. Please join us in keeping the Bailey family in our thoughts and prayers during this unimaginable time, the state GOP said. And on the front page accompanying this story is a photo of Darren Bailey announcing his 2026 Republican primary bid for the Illinois governor at the Drake Hotel Oak Brook on Thursday, September 25th, 2025. Together, Decatur, Garden Club thriving at 100. Green Thumb celebrate anniversary with historic costumes, skits. Dressed to impress, members of the Garden Club of Decatur donned clothing complete with the 1920s period style cloche hats and lace gloves to their latest meeting. But it wasn't just any meeting. The outfits aren't the standard outfits to be a member. Instead, they were a flashback to 1925 when the Garden Club was formed. Members of the Garden Club of Decatur met to celebrate the local club's 100th anniversary. As one of the longest-serving members, Ardath Schroat has attended the Garden Club of Decatur meetings for 37 years. Schroat was invited to join the club before she retired nearly 40 years ago, although she admits she doesn't know much about gardening. "My main interest is design," she said. Other interests among the Garden Club of Decatur members include bees, trees, and seeds. The members, both men and women, have been seen throughout Decatur tending to the downtown Decatur Community Gardens, Pollinator Gardens at the Children's Museum of Illinois, the Veterans Garden in front of the Macon County Courthouse, and the Monarch Station at the Decatur Public Library. "So there's a number of gardens in the community that we take care of," said Barbara Farrakane, current president. The club, with a current membership of 96, also hosts workshops and classes with guest speakers in various topics, such as conservation, gardening, and flower arranging. "They're related to gardening," Farrakane said. Christine Ramirez-Campbell, director of District 3, Garden Club of Illinois, attended the special 100th anniversary meeting. "It has been my pleasure and privilege to be inspired by your club for many years," she said. Ramirez-Campbell listed the three hallmarks for a successful garden club: strong leaders, passionate members, and a commitment to the mission. "And you have a wonderful track record, a big legacy," she said. The Garden Club of Decatur was already in existence when the National Garden Clubs was chartered in 1927. According to history, the clubs were formed because women who loved nature and beauty weren't always welcome in the male-dominated horticulture clubs and societies. The club began with 39 members, but quickly bloomed to 240. The early discussions often included garden tips and swapping plants. The members soon began to learn more about their communities. Imagine a Garden Club of Decatur where neighbors become friends, weeds become opportunities, and every corner of our town gets a little more beautiful, said Lisa Andrick, performing the part of the first Garden Club of Decatur president, Mrs. H.D. Spencer, during a skit commemorating the 100th anniversary. The history reaches into other elements of Decatur's past. The James Milliken homestead was often the site for meetings, including the first gatherings. "He didn't settle for the ordinary," Andrick said. "Few knew it, and he took his gardening very seriously." As the group grew, the club hosted garden talks, toured others' local gardens, and traveled to visit nearby cities and their garden clubs and their gardens. Even the celebration honoring the 100th anniversary was filled with history and color. Organizers studied the menu options as well. "Did they have chocolate chips?" said Kathy Sorensen about their research. "They had chocolate, but not chocolate chips. The beverages were a little trickier," she said. "The tea is not the same, but is as close as we could get to the way tea was made in the Garden Club many years ago," Sorensen said. "Our memory doesn't go back 100 years, but it goes back 50 years. And the photo here on one of the inner pages shows Lisa Andrick performing a reenactment of the 1925 founding of the Garden Club of Decatur at their 100th anniversary celebration at the James Milliken Homestead on Tuesday, October 21st. And she's holding a hand spade, and she's standing at a podium wearing a 1920s outfit with a hat. And the front page photo shows Kathy Oliver serving tea to Barbara Toney during the Garden Club of Decatur's 100th anniversary celebration at the James Milliken Homestead on Tuesday, October 21st. And there are plates of little square sandwiches, and triangular sandwiches, and Ms. Oliver is holding a teapot and wearing lace gloves, talking with another woman in the background who's holding a cup of tea and a plate with some kind of a pastry on it. And all the background is the beautiful James Millikan's home with chandeliers and paintings and high windows and dark woodwork and paneling. And there are other women in the background at different tables enjoying getting plates of goodies, and there's a buffet on the side. Looks quite elegant. In more local news on page A3, attempted murder charged. Police say woman twice drove over another, gave officer false ID. Shalisa Q. Long is accused of trying to win a confrontation by using her truck to run over a female victim twice in an attempt to kill her. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the 46-year-old victim suffered terrible injuries in the vehicular attack, which happened just before 3:30 p.m. Tuesday at the intersection of North Woodford and East Orchard Streets. Decatur Memorial Hospital emergency room staff said she has broken ribs, bruising to her collarbone, a pneumothorax, collapsed lung, and a hemothorax, bleeding between the lung and chest wall. And Officer Nicholas Bowman, who signed the affidavit, said Officer Bowman, who signed the affidavit. Interviewed in her hospital bed and described as barely able to speak, the victim managed to tell police trouble had flared as she and her adult son were walking home. They were suddenly confronted by the 46-year-old defendant, who accused her of having a slick expletive mouth. That triggered an argument which led to Long chasing her with an axe, according to Bowman. Then he quotes the victim as saying Long then threatened to run over her with her vehicle, a threat she hadn't taken seriously, as she and her son had finally managed to resume their walk home. The victim said she then heard what she believed was an engine roaring, and the next moment she was run over, Bowman added. She said that Shalisa ran over her twice. Police viewed a video which captured some of the violence. Bowman said it shows the truck driving at and running over a person that appears to be male, who then gets back up. This male runs over to another subject that is lying near the sidewalk and begins pulling this subject out of the way from the vehicle that is traveling at them again, the officer said. The subject that is lying on the ground appears to roll out of the way from the truck. The male then was dragging the subject, has to jump out of the way to avoid being struck again. This male then begins to punch the driver of the vehicle. Bowman does not list anyone else as being injured apart from the female victim. He then added that the defendant asked the defendant what happened and quotes her as saying that she had intervened to stop the victim's son from beating up her 62-year-old boyfriend. She said the son threatened to get a gun and kill her and her whole family and had chased her in her vehicle down the street. Shalisa stated that she never intentionally ran over anyone, Bowman said. Long's boyfriend confirmed he had been attacked by the victim's son after intervening to try and stop an argument between Long and the victim's son. He said the son had slammed him to the ground and proceeded to punch him in the face. The boyfriend stated at some point during the altercation that he observed Shalisa chasing the female victim with the axe, Bowman said. He stated he then went inside his house and never observed anyone get struck with a vehicle. Long appeared Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court, where she was arraigned on charges of attempted first-degree murder and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. She also faces a charge of obstructing justice after police accuse her of repeatedly giving them a false name before finally admitting who she was 5 hours later while locked up in the Macon County Jail. Judge Lindsay Shelton denied Long pretrial release and told her she posed too great a danger to public safety. The defendant is due back in court November 5th for a preliminary hearing when she will enter pleas to the charges. In state news, plane clips another at gate. This is in Chicago. United Airlines plane heading for its gate clipped the tail of another United aircraft at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, authorities said. No one was hurt in the October 17th incident, and the 113 passengers on flight 2652 from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, were able to leave the plane normally after a delay, United officials said in the statement. A second plane had its horizontal stabilizer struck and was not moving when the planes hit, officials said. Bill Marcus, a passenger on the flight from Wyoming, said he didn't even realize anything happened until the pilot said there would be a delay to document something and passengers on the plane saw a number of people gather around the right wing. I was shocked that I didn't feel something more, although when they separated the planes, there was some shuddering, Marcus told CBS News Chicago. It took about 40 extra minutes for the plane to get to the gate, he said. Earlier this month, two Delta Airlines regional jets collided at the intersection of taxiways at LaGuardia Airport in New York, injuring a flight attendant. Runway collisions like these could add to worries about aviation safety in the wake of recent crashes and near misses, including the deadliest plane crash in the United States in decades, when an Army helicopter collided with an airliner preparing to land at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport in January. In brief, Long Creek Township Dems plan soup supper. The Long Creek Township Democrat soup supper will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 24th. Chili and a vegetable soup will be available for $8 per person and include soup, a drink, and your choice of dessert. Tickets are available at the door or from Long Creek Township Democrat Precinct Committee members. State Representative Margaret Croak, 12th District, who is running for state comptroller, will be in attendance, and other state and local candidates have been invited. The supper will be held at the Township Community Center at 2610 Salem School Road. In more state news, on page A6, doctor accused of assault. This is from Evanston, Illinois. A new lawsuit alleges that a Skokie OBGYN and leader at St. Francis Hospital in Evanston sexually assaulted a patient at his private practice. The lawsuit, filed anonymously under the name of Jane Doe, contends that Dr. Riley Perry Lloyd sexually assaulted the patient in late October 2023 while she was visiting Lloyd's practice for medical issues. Attempts to reach Lloyd for comment were unsuccessful Monday. The lawsuit also names, as a defendant, Lloyd's practice, RPLMD. Lloyd has been chairman of St. Francis Hospital's Department of Gynecology for 4 years, said Noel True, a spokesperson for Prime Healthcare, which owns St. Francis, in a statement Monday. We take any allegations very seriously and are currently looking into the matter, True said in the statement. Neither Prime nor St. Francis is named as a defendant in the lawsuit. Lloyd is not an employee of St. Francis, but is an independent physician who provides services at St. Francis through his private practice, which is under contract with the hospital, True said. When asked whether Lloyd is still practicing at the hospital, True said in a statement, because this is an active legal matter involving an independent physician, we are limited in what we can share, but we are reviewing the situation closely. The woman who filed the lawsuit in Cook County Circuit Court on Friday contends in the lawsuit that she underwent a hysterectomy performed by Lloyd in 2017. Lloyd then treated her with hormone replacement therapy between 2017 and 2020, according to the lawsuit. By 2020, the woman began experiencing worsening health problems, including cognitive decline, according to the lawsuit. Around 2023, she noticed anatomical changes to her body and returned to Lloyd for hormone therapy, according to the lawsuit. In October 23, the woman went to a hospital emergency department after experiencing a rapid heart rate, pulse spikes, severe weakness, and shaking, according to the lawsuit. She was stabilized and released without a diagnosis. Within a few days of the episode, Lloyd called to check in with her and ask her about her health, including the concerns related to her sexual health that they had discussed during her previous appointment with him. The next day, he asked her to visit his clinic that evening. Once in the exam room, Lloyd asked the woman personal questions, including about her sexual preferences, the law contends. The woman then gave Lloyd her phone so he could watch a video she'd taken illustrating the problem, according to the lawsuit. Lloyd left the room with her phone and returned about 5 minutes later. Lloyd then sexually assaulted her over the course of about 5 minutes, according to the lawsuit. In November 2023, the woman reported the incident to the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, according to the lawsuit. The lawsuit alleges that Perry violated the Illinois Gender Violence Act and committed battery, among other things. The lawsuit seeks more than $50,000 in damages. And courts. State's attorney, mad deputy, shot Massey. Investigators provide testimony in Springfield area murder case. This is from Peoria. The Illinois Sheriff's deputy who killed Sonia Massey in her Springfield home last year eschewed his training and the principles of policing when he shot the black woman who had called 911 for help, a prosecutor said Wednesday in Sean Grayson's murder trial. Grayson, who is white, faces three counts of murder, first-degree murder for shooting the 36-year-old single mother on July 6th, 2024, during a confrontation over her handling of a pot of hot water she removed from her stove. Sangamon County State's Attorney John Millhiser told the jury of 8 women and 4 men in Peoria, where the trial was moved due to national attention, that body camera video will show Massey posed no threat when Grayson and other Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Dawson Farley entered her home. Massey, who had mental health problems, had called 911 about a suspected prowler. She's a little scattered, but she's nice and kind of talking to him, and you'll see that interaction, Millhiser said. You will see what happens when the defendant gets mad at a woman who is in her kitchen and has called for help. He gets mad and shoots and kills her without lawful justification. He did not follow his training. He did not follow police principles. But Grayson's attorney, Daniel Foltz, implored the jury not to make a hasty decision. He said when Massey approached with the pan of water, Grayson repeatedly demanded she put it down before making a decision no police officer wants to make. Ms. Massey lifted the pot of water above her head, and the evidence will show that the use of force was reasonable under the circumstances without the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, Foltz said. What happened to Ms. Massey was a tragedy, but it was not a crime. The killing had prompted continued questions about U.S. law enforcement shootings of black people in their homes and generated a change in Illinois law requiring fuller transparency on the background of candidates for law enforcement jobs. Grayson, 31, has pleaded not guilty. If convicted murder, he faces 45 years to life in prison. Prosecutors dismissed single counts of aggravated battery with a firearm and official misconduct. Grayson and Farley had entered Massey's home to report that they found no suspicious activity when Grayson noticed a pan on the stove and ordered it removed. According to body camera video, that is certain to play a key role in the trial. Grayson and Massey joked about how the deputy backed away as she moved the pan before Massey said, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus." Grayson later told sheriff's investigators he thought Massey's statement meant she intended to kill him. He yelled at her to stop, to drop the pot, and in the subsequent commotion, fired 3 shots, striking her just below the eye. Illinois State Police Lieutenant Eric Weston, a crime scene investigator, testified Wednesday that he retrieved 2 casings from the home shortly after the shooting, then returned 2 days later after learning about the 3rd gunshot. Investigators did not collect the pan for weeks. Weston acknowledged during questioning by defense attorney Mark Wyckoff, "You knew an hour after the event occurred that the pot was basically employed as a weapon, but you didn't collect it then," Wyckoff said. "You didn't collect it during the second search when the 3rd casing was collected. You collected it about 2 weeks later." Farley was expected to testify later in the day. And there is a picture that accompanies this, 2 pictures. The large one is from body camera of the other police officer. In this image taken from body camera video released by Illinois State Police, Sonia Massey left on the left of the picture, talks with former Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson outside her home in Springfield, Illinois, on July 6, 2024. And they're standing on her porch, and her front door is wide open. And the second photo shows Donna Massey in the center right, wiping tears from her face as she listens to Reverend Al Sharpton on the far right, speaking during a press conference over the shooting death of her daughter, Sonia, who was killed by Illinois Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson at New Mount Pilgrim Church. This is the gathering is at New Mount Pilgrim Church in the Garfield Park neighborhood in Chicago. This was from Tuesday, July 30th, 2024. And there's a photo of Sonia Massey and a drawing of a front of a head and a back of a head and showing where bullets entered her head. And there are several other people in the photo. Chicago rush hour chaos looms in bridge closures. Aldermen knocked the simultaneous shutting down of several north side and downtown bridges Wednesday as they vetted Mayor Brandon Johnson's infrastructure spending proposals for next year. The city council kicked off nearly a month of department-specific budget hearings by grilling Craig Turner, interim Chicago Department Transportation Commissioner. Rather than focusing on the mayor's proposed 2026 spending, they lobbed an array of ward-level nuts-and-bolts questions. Why is street resurfacing slow? Why aren't the sidewalks fixed faster? What are you doing to slow down traffic by the school? And over, aldermen representing the near north side and downtown ask why so many of the bridges are currently out of commission. "You've created quite a bit of chaos in rush hour," said Alderman Brendan Riley told Turner. "You guys really need to up your game when it comes to coordinating." 3 critical and close together bridges over the Chicago River were closed by CDOT in the last month for year-long renovations. The Lake Street Bridge estimated shut till January 2028, the Chicago Avenue Bridge slated to reopen in December 2026, and the Cortlandt Street Bridge closed until at least early 2027. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, October 24th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.